Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Hello, everyone. Today we travel back in time to 2007 and a presentation that Dr. Jennings gave to a group of students on the campus of Southern Adventist University in Collegedale, Tennessee. His subject, sexual abuse. And on today's program, we present part one of that presentation. I want to warn you that this program is intended for mature audiences only. Here's Dr. Jennings in Collegedale, Tennessee in 2007. Let's listen.
I've been asked to talk with you about a subject that doesn't often get talked about. A subject that has been kept in the closet of our society. But a subject which almost certainly impacts every family in this room. The subject of sexual abuse. Every 2.5 minutes, somewhere in America, someone is sexually assaulted. 1 in 6 American women are victims of sexual assault, and 1 in 33 men. The Justice Department estimates 1 in 6 victims are under the age of 12. About 44% of rape victims are under the age of 18, and 80% are under the age of 30. 59% of sexual assault goes unreported. Males are the least likely to report sexual assault and make up 10% of victims. 73% of sexual assaults are perpetrated by non-strangers. 38% of perpetrators were a friend or an acquaintance. 28% were an intimate relative. And 7% were another more distant relative. Statistically, over 200 women and 40 men in this room have been victims of sexual crime. This morning, we want to talk about ways to recover, to find peace, to heal. But before we can talk about ways to heal, it's important to understand what we're trying to heal. What's the damage? What's the problem? What's wrong? We have to diagnose first, because if our diagnosis is wrong, then our interventions are often wrong. So let's spend the first portion of our talk this morning try to identifying the problem. What happens? What's the damage? What occurs when someone is the victim of a sexual crime? And in this regard, it is important to recognize that not everything that is legally defined as a sexual crime is equally damaging. One of the paraphilias, a paraphilia is one of the sexual perversions, is called frauderism. Frauderism is when somebody becomes sexually gratified by bumping into a person who is unconsenting or non-consenting and unknowing. People that are gratified with frauderism will often bump into people in crowded subways or elevators and become sexually gratified. A victim of sexual crime, such as frauderism, may not even know that they're a victim. And therefore, they may not suffer any psychological trauma. But it's still a crime. Voyeurism. The voyeur observes people without their consent and becomes sexually gratified at their stealthy observations. Everyone in this room may have been a victim of a voyeur, but without knowledge of that victimization, we don't suffer trauma from that, even though it is a crime. We could construct a case in which a woman going into the hospital for vaginal hysterectomy is put under anesthesia, and after she's under anesthesia, she is raped, and then the hysterectomy is performed, and she awakes from anesthesia not suffering any psychological trauma. But 5, 10, 15 years later, someone shows her a videotape of what happened while she was under anesthesia. Now the trauma begins. Psychological damage comes not simply from the experience itself, but from the meaning, the interpretation, the way the experience is internalized by the person. One person is beaten with a whip and experiences pain, while another person experiences pleasure. This is true for any exploitation, not just sexual exploitation. If someone breaks into your home tonight, steals from you, leaves the home without your knowledge, and you never know that you were robbed because whatever was taken has not been missed, you won't experience any trauma. But what happens the day you find out that you've been victimized? Do you become anxious? Do you begin to worry? Do you have issues to deal with? The reason this is important to recognize is that when we discover a person or a child has been a sexual victim, it is important to uncover what they understand about the experience. Imagine an adult male fully dressed, bouncing a 2 or 3 year old child on his lap and becoming gratified by that experience. That would be legally a sexual crime. But the child may experience nothing but play. The real trauma might come when the child is put into psychological evaluations, testimony, witness experience, and so forth, and being told that you've been a victim, you've been sexually abused, and changing the experience from play to trauma. We must be careful on how we intervene into people's life. We must assess what they understand of the experience and intervene appropriately to the course. But now let's talk about situations in which the abuse is clear, known, unequivocal. When a parent overtly beats or overtly abuses a child over time, what happens? What's the damage? What's the problem? In order to understand this, we need to understand a couple of brain regions. Deep in your brain, there's a part of your brain called the limbic system. This is the system which is responsible for your impulses, your emotions, your aggression, your hostility, your desires. There's another part of your brain right behind your forehead. This is called your prefrontal cortex. This is where you do your thinking, your reasoning, your self-governance, your imagination, your worship, your conscience, all in the prefrontal cortex. If you're on your way home today and somebody cuts you off on the interstate and you get an aggressive urge to do something ugly, that aggressive urge is coming out of your limbic system. But if you remember, wait a minute, I'm a student at Southern. I don't behave in that way. And you restrain yourself. That is your prefrontal cortex at work. I want to talk to you about what happens when there's an imbalance, when something impairs prefrontal cortex functioning, when limbic system is still giving you these impulses, these drives, these aggressive things, but in prefrontal cortex is not able to process through, is not able to reason it out, is not able to exercise its normal role in overseeing the impulses that you get. Classic example is attention deficit disorder. In attention deficit disorder, a young person or a person with attention deficit doesn't have enough of a brain chemical in the prefrontal cortex called dopamine, and so it doesn't operate at 100% capacity. And the classic core feature of attention deficit is not just inability to attend, inability to focus, inability to concentrate. It's inability to restrain impulses. They're impulsive. They're moody. They act out. Another example, Alzheimer's dementia. And I know you've all heard of Alzheimer's. In Alzheimer's dementia, through a variety of reasons, neurons start dying in the brain, particularly in the prefrontal cortex. But limbic system is still working. And as people dement, as the disease progresses, they lose the ability to govern oneself. They begin acting out aggressively, sexually, and other ways. Alcohol intoxication. You intoxicate somebody with alcohol, you impair the function of the prefrontal cortex. Limbic system is still working. And I'm sure most people in this room have had the experience of dealing with somebody who has been intoxicated, and they begin acting out in ways they would never act if they were not intoxicated. They become aggressive. They become disinhibited, inappropriate, because the prefrontal cortex is no longer there to govern the impulses in the limbic system. What about television watching in children? I'm sure you've heard stuff about television watching and its impact on the brain. There's been much written about it. And you've heard, I'm sure, about the content issues. Bad content, garbage in, garbage out. Most people focus on content. They put in parental ratings, G ratings, PG ratings, R ratings, to try and protect children from bad content. But I'm here to tell you that the content is simply a magnifier of the problem. It just magnifies. Worse content makes it worse. The problem is theatrical television itself. And I'm going to explain to you what happens. We come into the world as infants with hundreds of millions of brain cells more at birth than you have by the time you're 8 years of age. For the first 8 years of life, your brain is busy killing, knocking off, deleting neurons, brain cells. On the surface, that doesn't sound too good. But conceptualize it this way. Michelangelo's block of marble when Michelangelo gets it. And Michelangelo's block of marble when Michelangelo is done with it. When Michelangelo is done, he has a masterpiece, but he has less marble. The brain comes into the world prepared to be acted upon by the influences of environment, education, experience. And the neurons of the brain cells that are utilized are kept, strengthened, and those circuits are grown stronger. But the neurons which are not being used, the brain deletes. I'm sure you've all heard tragic stories of children who are locked in cages. No one spoke any language to them. They were rescued at age 10, 12, 14, and they could never learn how to speak language, because the neurons which correspond to language were not being used. The brain deleted them. Now, why do I tell you this? Because what happens with theatrical entertainment? All theatrical entertainment has as its primary function And then we're talking theatrical television now. We're not talking you go over to church and it's so full you can't sit in the room and so you watch the preacher on a closed circuit TV. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about theatrical entertainment. Theatrical entertainment has as its primary function to simulate your limbic system, to get you to laugh, to get you to cry, to get you afraid, to get you aggressive, to get you angry, to get you aroused, to get an emotional reaction to stimulate your limbic system, while simultaneously theatrical television turns off your prefrontal cortex. It doesn't want you to think or reason or process. Has anybody seen the television program 24? Yes. I know some people who like to watch that program. They hate to watch that program with me. And they hate to watch that program with me because I sit there and I'll say, this is stupid. Do you actually think that all this stuff could happen in a 24-hour period? Do you actually think that this illegal alien could come into the country, get security clearances at a higher level than the president himself, get hold of a nuclear weapon and a stealth bomb, and do you actually think that could happen? And you know what they say to me? You're not supposed to think about it. You're supposed to suspend logic. You're supposed to turn off your prefrontal cortex. And so children coming into the world watching television have all the stimulation of the limbic system, all these impulses, all these emotions, but the part of the brain that processes them, that governs, that controls the impulses is being turned off. And the more hours they watch, during the developmental years particularly, but it's still true even now, the more hours they watch, the more impulsive, the more moody, and the less capable they are processing, and the higher rates of impulse control, anger, aggression, and attention deficit disorder directly related to the hours a person spends in front of the television. And then finally, I tell you all this because what about child abuse? Because that's what we're here to talk about today, child abuse. I've given you some examples. What happens? Prefrontal cortex is impaired. Limbic system is overly stimulated. We have problems with acting out. We have problems with mood control. We have problems with our behavior. Well, I want you to imagine you're in a situation right now that you believe that any moment somebody could come in and rape you or beat you severely. And with that belief that it could happen imminently, you have to take your final exams. Do you think your exam scores could be impaired? Yes, I see heads nodding. You bet. And you have a developed prefrontal cortex. Think about a child whose prefrontal cortex is not developed. Think about a child who's in a home and any moment daddy could come in and molest them or daddy could come in and beat them. Their anxiety symptoms, their limbic system is constantly firing fear, 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 anxiety, worry. The prefrontal cortex is trying to develop, but the prefrontal cortex is being impaired. It can't develop. And so these kids come into the world with difficulty, not just in their psychology, not just in the way they see themselves, not just in the way that they understand how relationships work, but they come into the world with hardware, with brain that has overstimulated anxiety centers, limbic system problems, and underdeveloped prefrontal cortex that allows to process, move through, and work through these difficulties. We have our work cut out for us to help people. I want you to understand what goes on. Christ said, woe to those who harm the little children. Why woe to those who harm the little children? Because we put up obstacles, we put up barriers, we put up things in the way that make it harder for them to experience the healing that God wants to bring us. But I want to assure every one of you in here, no matter what you've experienced, no matter what trauma you may have been through, there is healing for every one of you. God can and will heal all who let Him.
Well, our time is up for today. Join us next time for part two of this presentation at Southern Adventist University by Dr. Tim Jennings on the subject of sexual abuse. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit comeandreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at comeandreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.